Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of Chicago Bullseye. This is a two-part episode. In part one, you're going to hear our thoughts. Mark and I recorded the day after the disastrous Game 6. I hope you enjoy our thoughts on the topics of not only the game, but the future of Thibodeau. And in part two, you're going to hear a fantastic interview with Tim Gallagher, who's a basketball historian, a fantastic guy. I actually got a chance to play a little basketball with Tim, and let me just say he's one of the best shooters I've ever seen in person. Raised in Dayton, Ohio, he was coached and mentored by former University of Dayton and NBA Pioneer era players. He grew up playing hoops next to Jim and John Paxson, so he's good friends with John Paxson. He's attended 20 Final Fours, tons of NBA games at all the great arenas. And most exciting, he assisted or led in player development workouts for players that included David Lee, Richard Jefferson, and Kawhi Leonard. So I hope to have Tim on as a regular guest, and I hope you enjoy the interview with him. He shares his thoughts on the Bulls, the playoffs, Thibodeau, and he finishes it with some really interesting stories about John Paxson. So as he comes on throughout the year, we hope to have him tell us some more interesting stories about his relationship with John. And, you know, Tim's a great guy, and I can honestly say after hearing all these stories, you know, John is an excellent human being too. So, anyhow, I hope you enjoy. Any questions, email me at Chicago Bullseye. Follow me on Twitter at CBEFred, at CBEFred. Hope you enjoy parts one and two. I know you'll enjoy a lot more than that Game 6, the disastrous Game 6. Here you go. Have a good one.
Well, Bulls fans, my name's Mark. With me is Fred. Your stupid Chicago Bullseye. We're going to talk about the stupid Chicago Bulls. I'm angry. I'm ready to rant. Fred, how the hell are you?
Well, I've obviously been better. I mean, Mark, I think I concur with your thoughts. I'm still in a state of shock, I think, over how bad the entire team played. And I'm disappointed in every single player. You know, I really expected these guys, from Derek to Jimmy to Paul, every guy on this stinking team, to Noah, to play better than what we saw yesterday. I mean,
what's Paul going to do from the bench?
Well, he played a little bit in the second half. You know, I thought valiant effort, right? Obviously, the guy had an injury, and it showed up on MRI. And as someone who had hamstring injuries before, I thought he started out, you know, fantastic. Rage of fire, thing was great.
Sure.
Played fine offensively. But
and then we benched him.
It was clear in the third quarter he couldn't jump. He couldn't get a rebound. That third quarter was enough. It reminded me of the Washington games, where it was literally, you know, their big guys were doing tip backs, and it was like, you know, playing keep away with a second grader. It was horrific. And he couldn't move. He couldn't do anything really well, especially to me, you know, after the first quarter. You know, overall, I know his plus mine, I think it was like a minus five. I don't have it in front of me. I'll look really quick. I mean, overall, I know he probably had one of the better plus minuses compared to some of the other disasters I saw. Overall, though, every guy just sucked from the coach on down. And
coach on down. Starts with the coach. Starts with the coach. Terribly coached series by Tom Thibodeau. Get the F out of town.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think most people, he had a great 5 years here, right? And
yeah,
I think,
mediocre.
I think it ran its course. I mean, I thought he did a great job for us, and it's obvious to everyone that he's not going to be here. And I'm one of the guys that's fine with it. You know, and
go to Orlando, you stupid son of a bitch. The fact of the matter is that he's great with crappy talent. When Rose went, his best years were the years when Rose didn't play. And I mean, he only had one good series. Everybody, Tom Thibodeau. The only reason that we like Tom Thibodeau is because he went two rounds that first year when Rose was out. The fact was, we should have beaten Washington last year, and we didn't. We had pathetic playoff outings every single year, this being one of them. This is a pathetic playoff outing. This was a poorly coached series. Poorly coached series. The fact that the last game, when Jimmy effing Butler gets two fouls in the first 5 minutes, they're going to keep him on LeBron. LeBron goes off. You're keeping Jimmy on him. He can't defend him. He's moving out of the way every single time that LeBron tries to go to the hole. You're not going to put Smelly Cat on him? You're not going to put Smelly Cat on him? And then what about every game this series, man? The fact that he kept doing this stupid zone defense when Cleveland is hitting their threes. How many freaking threes does Cleveland need to hit before you're going to make adjustments? Apparently not enough. Apparently they didn't hit enough threes. Apparently if they hit more threes, maybe Tom Thibodeau had gotten it. He is a piece of get out of town!
All right. I understand what you're trying to say. You're a little bit more heated than I would. And you know I haven't been a fan at Thibodeau's coaching this year. I thought it was inexcusable to have
terrible coach
Noah on the floor at the end of game six and having risking injury with guys that are extremely valuable and not limiting minutes. I've never been a fan of that. But overall, I mean, I don't completely blame it on Thibodeau. Hey, Butler goes 8-22. He's minus 25 for the game. You know, I understand he's guarding LeBron, but, you know, he's one of our key players on the offensive end. Incredibly inefficient. You know, I just thought he did not play well.
He looked very lax, too. I just did not think – he didn't look like he was playing with a killer instinct. Most of the team didn't, really. I mean, most of the team yesterday looked like they were mailing it in. The minute that Cleveland got that lead, it was just – it seemed like the game was over. Like, they came out strong. They wanted to keep it tight, and then all of a sudden Cleveland came roaring back, and they were just like, oh, all right, whatever,
well,
let's go home.
You know, I had a lot of jokes about Heinrich, too. You know, Heinrich played well overall, shot well in the playoffs. One of my friends on Twitter sent me a note that he was the most efficient player. And, you know, he shot great. Hey, he was a minus
20. He's going to be efficient in 3.5 minutes.
He was a minus 29 in 20 minutes yesterday. Overall, in the six games, he was minus 41. The Bulls were a much worse team with him on the court. So I understand he shot it well. Overall, the guy sucks, and he shouldn't be playing in the NBA anymore.
No.
I don't know how many times I have to have this argument.
WNBA? WNBA? Is he
maybe
good enough?
WNBA. Hey, he was terrible for the vast majority of the season. I'm very happy he played well in the playoffs, but the team was worse because he provides no spacing. Nobody respects him. Come on, man. Are we really going to have this argument that Heinrich played great and was fantastic? A minus 29 in 20 minutes. That's all I got to say. And, you know, I understand also now Nico's had a lot of love all year. Everybody, Nico this, Nico that. Nico was a stinking train wreck in this series. I cannot come up with enough adjectives to describe how bad he played. I mean, today it was 42-40.
Can you try? Can you please try? Can you try?
It was 42-40. He does the clothesline. From that moment on, next.
Oh, my God, that clothesline was ridiculous.
He misses a wide open three, come back down, his man Chumper hits a three, and it right there, from that moment forward, we just got the doors blown off. And, you know, I like Nico. I think he's got all the talent in the world, and he's going to be a good player. But God almighty, was he terrible in these playoffs.
Terrible.
And that's
terrible.
A horrible, horrible sign. I mean, these three-pointers, I think he was 3 of 15 in the playoffs from three. I don't know. I have to go back. It was horrific percentage, under 25%. And I swear to God, I think about 70% of those three-pointers were wide open. No one was around them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how people continue kind of like to justify his play. He was fucking terrible, you know? And I did see a couple of people, well, he had a really good plus-minus in a few games. Yeah, he was also minus 26 in the game, you know, the one we lost game five, I think it was. I don't know what to say anymore, Mark.
The one thing I want to say, though.
Player,
go on, sorry.
Every player, including Derek. You know, I love Derek, 7-16 shooting yesterday. When Irvin goes out in the second quarter,
you've
got to just demand, hey, I give me the ball, I'm going to take over, I'm going to win this game. If you're an MVP player, and I didn't sense enough sense of urgency, I didn't sense enough, you know, I'm going to make this happen. I didn't sense enough. Get me the ball. I loved it when they went to him in the post. They go away from that. You know, I don't even know what to say. I think he had 2 points in the second half. And, you know, after the game he said, you know, I don't mind Tibbs as my coach. You know, that's hardly a sting, you know, or a ringing endorsement. I think it's time we just part ways. The offense is just horrific. And
it's terrible.
Contrary to popular belief, you know, we got defense wins championships. We got to shut up that mantra. Offense and defense wins championships. The Bulls won all those championships.
Our defense wasn't that good, man.
With the best offensive player of all time. The defense, well, it was good in the third quarter. Cleveland scored 15 sticking points, and we scored 16. We had, in quarter two, 13 points. Quarter three, 16 points. Quarter four, 13 points. Inexcusable. That is.
I made excuses
effect.
Back in the day. I made excuses because we didn't have the talent. We had the talent this year. There is no question that we did. Everybody thought that this was a team that could compete for a title. So there's no excuse. You had the talent, and you blew it. You blew it.
Yeah.
Tom Thibodeau really looked awful in this whole series. And everybody says, what makes a great playoff team? Adjustments. The reason that the playoffs is different than the regular season is that you get the opportunity to make adjustments, and Tom Thibodeau cannot make adjustments. He's completely inept in that category as far as coaching. He cannot make adjustments. He never, ever has, as far as lineup adjustments, defensive adjustments. He doesn't do anything. And this whole effing series, I don't get it. Like, we were just leaving them wide open for three after three after three, and they kept hitting their threes. And we didn't do anything about it. I mean, it was a pathetic effort, pathetic coaching. I'm so happy that it's time for this jackass Tom Thibodeau to get out of town. Go to the Pelicans and ruin their team. Go to the Orlando Magic. You love to be with teams where everybody on the team sucks so much that nobody's going to question the type of coaching effort that you make. So let's go to Orlando. Maybe you can make them win 35 games next year, and you'll win Coach of the Year.
You got to calm down, because let's step back for a second here. Tom Thibodeau's a darn good coach, and if he goes to Orlando, that's the one I'm most concerned about, because I think he's going to make that team a really solid team. But I do feel there's no doubt the guy's an AC guy. You know, he takes bad teams and he makes them good by stressing defense, but for whatever reason, this guy does not have what it takes to take the team to the next level. This team underachieved by any measure this year. How you can argue otherwise is beyond me. You know, and in his grand history of stuff, the team has been a massive disappointment in the playoffs. When you had an MVP Derrick Rose and you had health in 2010 and 11, you had both of those, with the exception of Amir Ashik going out in the Miami series. You didn't get it done. You didn't get it done. So you weren't able to devise an offense that didn't just totally basically say, Derek, win it for us in 2010 and 11. And you weren't able to use all the weapons that you had to the best of your ability this year. Your job is to put guys in position to succeed on the offensive end, not just the defensive end. That didn't happen. You're responsible for that. And I feel like I want to send him. I am disappointed, though, and I think this is an important point. The Bulls need Pat Owens. The Bulls have all the hand here. We should have had all the hand. We own Tom Thibodeau for the next 2 years. We can delegate or relegate wherever we want to put him. So he can go to Denver. That's would be my favorite spot. I'd love to see Tom.
Oh, I would love to see him in Denver.
Try to squeeze out 30 wins out of that god-awful team.
Especially go to a team that has no defensive ability whatsoever, a purely offensive organization for the past, 10 years. Please, go there. I want to see this guy's face get run into mud. He is a... he's Doug Collins. That's what he is. He's Doug Collins. The fact that he's Doug Collins. I mean,
Collins is a great
coach. He's not even the guy, though, that can get you to that next level. Like, he is great. When the talent is crap, then it's like, all right, he will get the most out of complete shit. So go to a team that's complete shit, because maybe you're going to give them 5 more wins, and God bless you, Tom Thibodeau, thumbs up. The fact is that nobody is going to say that this season was not a colossal failure. This was the best team that he has had, right, Fred? Would you agree? Best team that Thibodeau's ever had?
I would agree.
And we only want, I would, as far as the wins go, I think that everybody would say we did not win enough games this year. I mean, we won 60 games this first year with a much lesser team than we had this year. Now, granted, we had those injuries towards the end, but nobody, even when Rose was playing and Jimmy was playing and everybody was playing, nobody is going to say that they were satisfied with the performances that we were giving during the year. Effort, things like that. I mean, Thibodeau obviously had lost his team throughout the season. When you're losing to the Pistons, you're losing to the Magic. And you almost lost the Magic twice. I mean, he's not right for this team. It's time to get a new coach. But now, the onus goes on Gar Pax. Now, are you going to go out there and get some jerk off like Fred Hoiberg, who's about to, on the verge of a heart attack, gets knocked out in the first round by a lower seeded team of the NCAA tournament? You're going to go and go get a coach that can't even succeed at the college level.
Hold on. I'm not going to tolerate this stuff. I've been hearing a lot of people trying to compare, Iowa State again. We're going to do the Tim Floyd thing with Fred Hoiberg.
No. No, stop it. The only qualification that Tim Floyd had in coaching in the NBA was that he would listen to freaking Jerry Krause's stupid stories and fish with him. That was his total qualifications, and he sucked as a coach, and he was horrible, and he had no business coaching the NBA. Fred Hoiberg is far more qualified. He played in the NBA. He has executive experience in Minnesota. The guy is a fantastic coach, and he took a garbage organization and brought them to respectability in the Big 12. I agree. They didn't do great in the tournament one year. They lost. There's tons of coaches that have lost first round and upsets. So,
we are the Chicago Bulls, man. We are a major organization.
It'd be a good
We're
going to
go out there and go get some college coach that can't even win at the NCAA level? No. No. At
yes.
least get it.
Yes.
I'm okay with an assistant
yes.
coach. I'm okay with somebody with some NBA experience. I am not okay going
stop
out
it.
There and getting somebody that has no
stop
NBA
it.
Experience.
You need to stop. He's a good. He will do a fantastic job. If we hire Fred Hoiberg, we could go far worse than that. I am completely fine with that hire. This nonsense about college coaches.
Says Mr. Vinny Del Negro.
No, Vinny Del Negro was an abomination. He never coached in college. He never did a damn thing.
What is coaching? Of all of the college coaches ever, they had this giant chart on Bleacher Report of all the college coaches ever. You've had like two that have had success at the NBA level. Brad
Stevens.
But that's it. So because Brad Stevens has been good, we're not getting Brad Stevens. So because Brad Stevens was good, we're going to go out there, we're going to go against all of history and start hiring somebody that coached small-tier school in the middle of God knows freaking where that went out in the first round to a lower-seeded team. It's ridiculous.
No, I think you're nuts.
The great show right here.
He played in the league. He knows exactly.
So did Dennis Rodman. Why didn't he coach the team?
He knows the in and outs. Come on. No, this is a guy who has coaching experience. It's not Dennis Rodman walking around cross-dressing in North Korea. This is a guy who's got the skills, who understands offense, who understands defense, who will get along with the GM, which is part of your job to say and to work together to put the best team out on the court. McDermott's progress and development was totally submarined this year by Tom Thibodeau in an effort to screw management. I believe that. I think you make the argument. You did not nearly get what you should have out of an elite shooter, and that's all going to change when Fred Hoiberg comes in down. You got to stop this nonsense. You got to stop. Iowa State comparing Tim Floyd to Fred Hoiberg isn't even a remotely good comparison, and I won't tolerate it. I won't. I won't.
I cannot wait for him to come to town and completely fail because I'm going to remember this show. I'm going to etch it on my freaking wall so that I never forget these words that you echoed right now. Because
and you're
going to
apologize.
Tom Thibodeau, every coach we have gotten since we've been doing this podcast, you have been, you know, you've been very angry about. You've never been happy with a single coach that we've gotten.
That's
and I understand
true.
Why. You were not
That's
happy
not
with
true.
Tom Thibodeau. You did not want Tom Thibodeau.
That is not true. That is not a true statement. I was fine with Thibodeau's hire. I was not fine with Vinny Del Negro. Let's go back in history. Skiles.
I have the tape.
No, I have the tape. Ecstatic about Skiles. I was not happy about Jim Ball Boylan because the guy should be coaching.
What's it since we started the show? Skiles was before we started the show.
Okay, but I was very happy about that. And I was very happy about their first choice, which was Doug Collins. That would have been an excellent
That's
hire.
True. You were very all about Doug Collins. You were all about him.
And I was 100% right on that. Doug Collins is a good coach. He did a great job everywhere he went. He's an A to B guy. And what did we hire? We hired Vinny Del Negro. We hired basically a B to F guy. The guy's terrible. So that I was not happy about Vinny Del Negro because he had no business coaching. But in fairness to Gar Pax, that was basically a management decision. They already paid Skiles. They had to go on a sheet for a bump. They hired a bump. Didn't work out. Corrected the mistake in hiring Thibodeau. I was fine with the Thibodeau hire. I wasn't ecstatic about it. I don't feel like guys like that should get their first chance in Chicago just because we're Chicago.
But it's okay for Fred Hoiberg to get his first chance in Chicago. But it's okay for Fred Hoiberg to get his first chance in Chicago. It's ridiculous.
Because Fred Hoiberg.
Ridiculous.
No. Fred Hoiberg to me is a legitimate coaching talent.
Where are you coming up with this? Where? Iowa State better than they were before?
What are you talking about? Yes, they were very good. I mean, Kansas has won that stinking league like every freaking year, and he did a great job this year. By any stretch of the imagination, who
so you're going to have him learn the ins and outs. Look, one of the biggest things with this team is that we never got in a groove this year, is that the entire season was like this giant train wreck where it was like you were trying to just hope that things piece together at the end. You need a coach from day one who's going to come in and instill a system, not learning on the job, and that's going to get this team ready for the playoffs and we're running on all cylinders.
You sound like every guy who defended Mark Jackson and said Mark Jackson should have been fired, and in hiring Steve Kerr, he made a big mistake. Mark Jackson was an excellent coach. I think the similarities
with an NBA executive
huge, and I think the similarities with Steve Kerr and a coach like Fred Hoiberg are huge. I think Fred Hoiberg will make the Bulls better. I believe it. In all my heart, Fred Hoiberg will be a better coach than Tom Thibodeau.
He understands
players better. He's more player friendly. He's the type of coach you need in 2015. All right, man, I gotta go. We've argued enough here, and I'm.
That was a good show.
I got a lot of fire. I'm very angry. I was fine and calm until you started in with this stuff about Fred Hoiberg sucks. It's not true.
He does not compare
to Tim Floyd. That is a completely wrong
comparison. I didn't compare him to Tim Floyd. I'm comparing him to Vinny Del Negro, not Tim Floyd.
Oh, that's Vinny Del Negro did not coach in college, and he had zero success. Fred Hoiberg did. Huge success.
Vinny Del Negro was at least an NBA executive, as was Steve Kerr. Now, when Steve Kerr got hired, I did not agree with the hiring. I was proved wrong. God willing, when we hire Fred Kratberg, hopefully I will feel the same way, that I made a mistake and that, he's a decent coach. But the fact of the matter
Fred
is that
the bullseye, and Fred we trust on the bullseye, and Fred we trust on the Bulls, believe me. All right, man, I gotta go. God bless you, brother.
Wait, can I say one more thing?
All right, hurry up.
The one thing that I do want to say, I want to give credit where credit is due. Cleveland should have won General Manager of the Year this year. I don't even know who their General Manager is, but he should have won the award this year. I've never in my life seen a team that lost a major part of their team early in the season. We thought when Anderson Varejão went down, it looked like Cleveland was done. And they got better. I have never seen a team be able to pick up scraps along the way and make their team better after a major part got injured. You got to give him credit, man. And I mean, look, you had guys like Dellanova stepping up. You had guys like, I mean, obviously, Shumpert and Smith. My God, Shumpert has been he has come back from his ACL injury. He has not been a good basketball player.
He played great yesterday.
He played great in the series. Part of it being, we left him open every single effing time. Because Tom Thibodeau doesn't like to make adjustments, so we're just going to continue to play a zone, even though they're jacking up threes and they're hitting every single one of them, whatever.
Well, hold on. He didn't play that great yesterday. He was 5 of 14, 2 of 4 from 3, but he was a plus 26, so...
Still, 5-14. The fact is, this series, he's hit big shot after big shot after big shot. That team did an incredible job of rebuilding themselves, considering the injury that they got early on in the season. You got to give Cleveland credit. They look good. Frankly, I almost think that they're better without Kevin Love, because Kevin Love's not a rim protector. Kevin Love's not a good defender. He's not a rim protector. And frankly, when you got a guy like that that takes that many shots in a game, you're taking away shots from Kyrie. You're taking away shots from LeBron. This team is tougher with Tristan Thompson. And I mean, frankly, I hope that they fire their coach for their sake. I hope that they fire their coach because he's a piece of shit. The fact that they did not start Tristan Thompson, I mean, you see, this guy is a legit four. He is a good four. The fact that they didn't start him in game one was a complete joke. It was a complete joke. You played Mike Miller, who's barely played all year, and he's been terrible this entire year, over a guy that's actually a four, that actually plays that position. Get rid of David Blatt. This team has a very bright future, and you got to give them credit where credit is due. My hat's off to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Now, your fans suck. Your fans are very low class. I think that they're all like truck drivers and garbage men and things like that. I mean, that's what I would think based upon what we saw, throwing things at Taj Gibson, just yelling every single time something would happen. You'd see them like screaming at no one, things like that. Just low class people, bad people, gross, disgusting people. That's the people that live in Cleveland. Terrible fans. Great organization.
We're here with basketball historian Tim Gallagher. Tim, thanks a lot for joining the Bullseye. First question, as an outside observer, you're not an avid Bulls fan like most of our listeners, but an outside NBA fan follows the league. What has disappointed you most about this Bulls team in this series versus the Cavs?
Well, thanks for having me, Fred. First of all, I wanted to say I really enjoy your podcast, and it's a good companion for some of my commutes to and from the office, so really enjoy what you do with with the site and the podcast. And also, I have to tell you, I wish I was in Chicago right now because it's the center of the basketball universe with the NBA combine going on this week, and then obviously the Cavs at the Bulls. So I can't think of any place I'd rather be than Chicago, but unfortunately I'm not there. About the Bulls and what I've been disappointed about at this point, I'd say similar to a lot of the teams that are in the playoffs right now, is that they're just not 100% with injuries. You know, the Gasol injury obviously has had a big impact, and I thought when Kevin Love went down that despite whatever people were saying about LeBron's superhuman capabilities, I just didn't think there was any chance at all without Kevin Love with a full-strength Bulls team. But with Gasol going down, obviously that changes the mix of things. But I'd say the biggest disappointment is just the lack of attention on defense on some occasions. And that last play of Sunday's game when LeBron hit the game winner just really bothered me in terms of – I love Jimmy Butler, love his intensity, love his effort, but – first of all, he's a smaller guy on LeBron at that point, and just that there wasn't some other mix of defense, you know, maybe having Noah or even Dunleavy, somebody that's longer and a veteran that's going to get the benefit of a call and use their length to make things a little tougher for LeBron. And you know, Taj would also fit into that list, although the way he was sleepwalking, guarding Dellavedova on the inbounds, and then offering no help at all. I don't know if I'd put his name in the mix as far as somebody guarding LeBron, but you get my point of having somebody that's longer just to make it more difficult. The other thing is an adjustment, and we'll get to the West here in a little bit, I know, but one adjustment that's gotten a lot of praise from the Memphis Golden State series is when Kerr put Bogut on Tony Allen and basically dared Tony Allen to make shots. And that changed the whole flow of the game. And so watching the Cavs against the Bulls, that there hasn't been some similar adjustment with Kyrie Irving's not at full strength. When Dellavedova's in the game or a non-scorer outside of point-blank range of Tristan Thompson, I would dare those guys to beat you. And hyper guard, hyper be aware of Irving, J.R. Smith, and of course LeBron. So I know Tibbs is thought of as a defensive genius, but just that coaches in general and Tibbs in this series hasn't come up with something a little more unique or creative. You know, I remember in the old days with big scorers that would, you know, when college players were averaging 35 points a game, you hear about defenses like a triangle and two or a box and one or things like that. And you know, when a team like Cleveland has some non-threats in the game, right? I look at Dellavedova is a very poor man's Kirk Heinrich type of player. So I would just dare him to beat me. Dare him to beat me, right? And if he's going to start knocking down 18-footers, three-pointers, so be it. But I would guard them the way, when they're in the game, guard them the way that Golden State was handling it with Tony Allen. And when Tony Allen made his first shot the other night, I thought to myself, that's the best thing that could happen to Golden State because now Tony Allen's going to think he can score.
Well, you bring up a great point because I couldn't agree with you more. I feel like Tim's answer to everything is to, you know, put your head down and work harder. Very little creativity, and, you know, he's not really going to change it. I haven't really seen any that I could just, but even in a Milwaukee series where, you know, you literally knew when Gasol was going to be double-teamed in the post, you knew he was going to be double-teamed. And to counteract that or to punish that, he really never came up with anything. Unless you can argue in Game 6 when they basically just, you know, got it over the other side as possible and had Dunleavy fire away. Moving on to that, Tibbs, I'd like to bring up that question is, what do you think of Tibbs? What are his strengths? What are his weaknesses? And as an outside observer, do you feel that his firing, potential firing this year would be justified?
Well, obviously, I think it depends on what happens in this series, but you know, firing good coaches is a pretty common practice in the NBA. You could make some arguments for a lot of guys, but Lionel Hollins getting fired at Memphis, you could argue even Monty Williams getting fired in New Orleans was really not that justified, or Scott Brooks. But you know, sometimes I think also coaches kind of run their course, right? And I remember Pat Riley at the tail end of the Lakers, he just felt like his tactics and approach to the players had just kind of worn thin on them, right? And a fresh voice, a fresh face. So I don't know if Tibbs is kind of at that point where he's plateaued in terms of what they're doing. I mean, obviously he's regarded as a top one of the top handful of coaches in the NBA. I know, Fred, when you and I were at the Memphis game in Chicago earlier this year, I like to look at some of the games within the game. And I remember late in the game when it was pretty much decided, Tony Allen, a former player under Tibbs in Boston, happened to be walking over by the sideline, and Tibbs was there, and they exchanged a little affection with each other, I guess you'd say. It kind of showed me a lot where a guy like Tony Allen, who's probably not much of a sentimental guy, you could see he respected Tibbs and the history that, you know, that they'd had together. And so to see a player of his toughness and mindset have that kind of acknowledgement to Tibbs and respect for him told me a lot.
Yeah.
There's an interesting podcast with Jeff Van Gundy on with Zach Lowe on the Lowdown, where they talk about coaching changes and justification for that, and is the team really going to get better and under a different style or a different voice? It's, you know, there's obviously not a set answer to that. So, you know, again, my concern, it's not just with Tibbs, it's just the lack of adjustments that seem to be made. You know, I was, like I said, I brought it up earlier, I was really excited to see Kerr or whoever on that staff recognize that, you know, things were not going well with the way they'd been defending, especially Gasol and Randolph, and to mix things up and keep Bogut on the floor, but with having on Tony Allen, I think that's a little out of the box kind of thinking, and I'd like to see a little more of that, especially when you're playing a team in a, you know, could be a 7-game series. It's a little different than the regular season where it's a different team every night or every couple of nights, and things don't really settle in. So in a situation like this where it's a long series, long physical series, the teams are very familiar with each other, why not mix it up, right? So throw something a little different in there. I don't see that kind of flexibility. And then again, the other thing is other adjustments in terms of just mixing up defenders or daring other less dangerous players to try to beat you. With Irving having some leg issues, and why not put Aaron Brooks in there? Put a jet in there that's going to make Kyrie Irving have to work defensively, or chase him around, or just be a pest to him. So maybe give Brooks some more minutes and something like that. Just to maybe it's not the normal substitution pattern that they've had throughout the season, but something that is an adjustment to make Cleveland, you know, get on their heels and it'll be off guard a little bit.
What do you think of David Blatt so far this season and also in the playoffs?
Well, I like the way Cleveland's front office stood behind him early on when things were looking shaky, right? It's a long season. A couple things that have concerned me, and I like David Blatt. I'm very familiar with his international coaching experience and even as a player at Princeton, and I think he's very qualified to be an NBA coach. Obviously, he's a rookie coach, though, and in some pretty intense circumstances now, regardless of what kind of decisions he's making. But certainly the attempting to call timeout late in the game when he had no timeouts left, I think is inexcusable at almost any level of basketball. I mean, I'd argue that a lot of people coaching peewee basketball have in their mind how many timeouts their team has. That was surprising to me. The other thing, and also kind of back to my thought about coaches not making more adjustments or doing something a little out of the box, is a couple times against the Bulls, they've had 5-point leads with under a minute to go, and I believe in both cases Jimmy Butler hits a three both times, right, to take it from 5 to 2, just like that. And I've always thought the NBA, some NBA coach or some staff should hang their hat on, we're going to go into a kind of the NBA's equivalent of a prevent defense, where we're just not going to give up threes. We'll give up a two, because that really changed the whole flow of the game. For the Bulls fans, that's great, because it got them back in the game on that 1 3-point shot. But again, if there's not any more creative defenses or just hyper attention paid to just no threes, we're not going to give up threes. And switch on everything, go on top of the screen. If Tristan Thompson, I'm thinking of Cleveland now, right? So if Tristan Thompson's setting the screen, you just double on J.R. Smith and forget about Tristan Thompson, right? Let him get his two if you've got a 5-point lead. So overall with Blatt, I think I would give him a solid B, but there's been a few alarming things that I've seen, and I kind of have some mixed thoughts about LeBron scratching the play. that he had drawn up late in the game. You know, I don't know if it obviously worked out. It worked out, and I didn't hear the actual exchange in the huddle of how that went down, but I could certainly see a Kobe Bryant or a Michael Jordan, maybe not with Phil, but maybe with maybe a less experienced coach that, no, we're not going to do that. You know, just give me the ball and get out of the way type of thing. So, yeah, it's been an interesting series on a lot of levels, and you know, I think a lot of coaches have gotten some unique attention for either decisions they've made or not made.
Who's your favorite right now to come out of the West, and why?
Well, since the Spurs are out of the picture, I think everyone else in the West took a big sigh of relief, especially Golden State. And that San Antonio Clippers series was a classic, and it had the feeling of a conference final. Too bad that that's already been played, and we don't have that to look forward to in a conference final. I hope that there's a conference final like that in one of the divisions. But I've liked Golden State all along, and obviously that's an easy choice since they had the best record and one of the best regular season records in the history of the league. I still think they're going to come out of the West, but as you and I saw, Fred, when we saw Memphis play at Chicago during the season, Memphis is a very tough out and plays with a little different style than most teams in the league, and a style that really, when you talk about the cliche of in the playoffs, it's not fast break, transition, run and shoot. It's half court grinded out basketball, and that's what Memphis does better than anybody in the NBA for the most part. So I think that caught Golden State off guard a little bit, and even watching the game the other night when Golden State tied it at 2 at Memphis, just the intensity and hyperactivity that both teams were playing with early in the game, you could just see it was hard for Curry to kind of exhale and get into any kind of rhythm. You know, both teams were just so amped up, which was fun to watch. But
completely agree. Yep.
But he finally settled in, and so I think Golden State with home court for one. Number two, that the Spurs are out of the picture because I think that's the team they feared the most, even though Memphis has given them fits. And the thing that I like that Kerr did in terms of that adjustment, we've talked about it, that you know, a little more out of the box with putting Bogut on Tony Allen, right? Who would have thought of that? The other thing he did in Game 4 is he played David Lee. I know he was forced to because of Spates' injury, but I'm a big advocate of playing veteran players that have got respect of the officials and can maybe get away with a little shove or or knee or elbow in the paint. And that's what playoff basketball is all about. So that David Lee, for whatever reason of him not being a factor the first couple of games, I don't know if that was due to injury or just, you know, again, we don't see what's going on in practice and what else is part of the story. But the fact that David Lee was in there and a big contributor the other night, I think helps as well. Plus, it just gives him a bigger body also with defending Gasol and Randolph, which you know, have been given the Warriors fits. The other thing I'll say with Golden State is the Jerry West factor, which I know Bob Myers was general manager, executive of the year. Curry was MVP. Kerr was right there in the final running for coach of the year. But even though he's keeping a low profile, Jerry West is whatever his title is, strategic advisor or whatever he wants to call himself in the front office, that you know, wherever he's been, he's got the Midas touch, right? It turns to gold. And the Lakers haven't really been the same since he left, right? They had a little more success after in his immediate departure, and then but then Memphis got good once Jerry West got there and have been good ever since. And then he's been at Golden State the last few years, and look where they are. So even though he's behind the curtain, I think Jerry West's insight, experience with the game, and brilliance, I think, will also be a big plus on the side for Golden State.
Great. I'd like your take on, and I apologize, I didn't send this before, but this question before to you, but I'd like your take on, you know, the practice that we're seeing in the Rockets / Clippers series of the Hack Jordan and Hack Howard, and in general, number one, what the strategy behind it, what's your take on the strategy, but number two, big picture, for the game overall, I think this is just, you know, awful. What's your opinion on it and the strategy and, you know, what do you think will happen next year if there is going to be rules taken to curb it?
Right, the hack-a-shack rule. And I'm old enough to have seen Wilt play some at the tail end of his career, and you know, he was a very poor free throw shooter as well. So I have flashbacks to Wilt at the line too, seeing these guys shoot free throws. And boy, the Houston Clippers series with DeAndre Jordan and Dwight Howard at the line so much. I don't know what my lifetime capacity is for watching those two guys shoot free throws, but I think I'm getting close to it. And, you know, and it's almost making watching those games, you know, impossible, you know, and despite incredible talents like James Harden and Blake Griffin. And yeah, I don't like the fact that it occurs during the course of a game. Although I think it was Reggie Miller I heard mention that, you know, if someone is not skilled at a certain area of the game, then why not exploit that, right? You're not, if one of your players is a very poor defensive player, you're not going to change the rules on how someone gets guarded for the benefit of a guy who can't play defense. That was pretty insightful to me in terms of making a change to the rule. It's certainly not fun to watch. I don't know what the solution is to it. The thing that I'd always be concerned about, and even though it's probably been used on the Clippers more than anyone because of DeAndre Jordan, that the Clippers have still kept winning, right? So in the big picture, I guess it really hasn't affected the outcome of the game in terms of at least who's winning the games. But
right.
But I've always been of the thought, and I go back to a series a few years ago when Houston, as you know, it was Oklahoma City was playing Houston, and Omar Asik, who you know, of course, from his days on the Bulls, was playing for the Rockets at the time, and he's not a good free throw shooter, and Oklahoma City kept fouling him, but it really became evident to me with OKC, with players like Durant and Westbrook, who were healthy during that series, that so much of their offense comes in transition and fast breaks, and so despite the fact that Asik was not making many free throws, it took Oklahoma City totally out of the flow of their offense, right? So when he's at the line all the time, the only time you're getting possession is either after a made or missed free throw. And those don't very, very often turn into fast breaks, really never, right?
Exactly.
And so I think there's some risk in terms of the team doing the fouling that it's going to take them out of their flow, right? And but I think the obvious change I would make is if it's an intentional foul, then it's free throws and the ball. But the other side of me, though, and Fred, you and I have been on the court and shot together and had some fun playing horse and shooting hoops a lot. And so
exactly. We
probably more than anybody appreciate what a good shooter is and the kind of work and time and effort that goes into that. So let somebody off the hook from making free throws, I'm not a fan of that either. So I guess I didn't give you a definitive answer on that one. I'll be very curious to see what changes are made, and I think there's some good arguments on both sides of it.
And Tim, thanks again for joining the Bullseye. One more question for you before, and you've given us so much time, your time the way it is, and looking forward to having you on as a regular guest. You grew up with John Paxson. Can you tell us something, a Bullseye listener, something, an average Bullseye fan, in 2015, something you may not know about John Paxson?
Absolutely. I was very fortunate to grow up in Dayton, Ohio, and both John and his brother Jim, and of course he had other brothers and sisters that I knew as well, so known the family pretty much my whole life. So John's one of the classiest, best people I've ever known in my life. Obviously the Bulls fans know him quite well from his playing days and obviously being in the front office. But I thought of two different things that might be a little off the radar that many of the listeners might not know, going back to John's playing days. And the first one, I'll keep it really short on the first one, but when John was in high school, our high school, which was in Kettering, Ohio, Alter High School, won the state championship in 1978. That was John's junior year of high school. And in the state semifinals, they beat a team that had Art Schliester as their star. So some of you might remember Art Schliester as a football back for Ohio State.
The gambler.
Played in the NFL, had some personal issues with gambling, and I believe ended up in jail due to some issues with that. But Art Schliester was the star of the team that Alter beat in the state semifinals that year. And John played great in the state tournament there, and even though it was a junior, led the team with a number of other really good players, but John was certainly the floor general and leader of that team. The second story I'd share is, so growing up Catholic in the Midwest back in those days, even though we lived in Dayton and, of course, loved Dayton Flyers basketball, we all loved Notre Dame football and basketball more. So it was kind of our dream as kids playing in the driveway to play for Notre Dame someday. Well, John's older brother, Jim, who's a very outstanding player as well, all-state player, went to state semifinals as a high school player a couple years ahead of John, was not recruited by Notre Dame, even though he was a very high-profile player and recruited by a lot of big schools. And Digger Phelps at the time said that he was already covered at that position. And I remember what a big disappointment that was to Jim and the Paxson family. And Jim ended up at Dayton, became an All-American, had a long NBA career, two-time All-Star, and is working with John in the Bulls front office now. So it all worked out well for Jim. But so when John kind of even took things to another level a couple years later at our high school and with basketball, he kind of fulfilled the family dream and went on and played at Notre Dame. And, of course, was an All-American and had a great career there. So that's kind of a neat story of how John ended up at Notre Dame. His final schools were Duke, North Carolina, and Notre Dame. I remember when he was being recruited and fulfilled that family dream of playing in South Bend.
What a story, Tim. Those are two phenomenal stories. I'm really looking forward to hearing more as we go along. But in general, a follow-up question. You know, I always had the idea in my head that Jim was probably the better pro. Maybe I'm wrong there, but, you know, because I was so young at the time. But it seemed like to me Jim was a kind of like a fantastic pro, where John was, you know, very good, obviously clutch shooter, but more of a probably role player. At the time in high school, when they were going into college, who had the better, would you say, quote-unquote, pedigree?
Boy, that's a tough one. Well, their father was an NBA player as well, so their dad, Jim Paxson Sr., played in the, I guess we'd call it the pioneer era days now of the NBA for the Minneapolis Lakers and Cincinnati Royals. And so there was certainly a tremendous basketball tradition in their family. I would say they were both about equals coming out of high school. John was a McDonald's All-American. I think one of the first years they had the McDonald's All-American game, John played in it. You know, that's a tough one. I mean, Jim was a two-time All-Star with the Trailblazers. And I got to see Jim play quite a bit. I was living in Phoenix during the prime of Jim's NBA career, so I got to see him play quite a bit. And he played for Dr. Jack Ramsey. And Ramsey ran a lot of plays for Jim. Was one of the masters at moving without the ball. You know, from kind of old school names some of your listeners may know of, like John Havlicek or Bill Bradley, where, you know, he was relentless at moving without the ball. Kind of like how Richard Hamilton, you know, more of a modern day player, the way he went about things during his prime with the Pistons. And so the Blazers had some excellent teams, and Jim was bigger. Jim's about 6'6", and in high school and even early in college played forward more than guard. He was aware that in the NBA his position was probably going to be a two, so he developed guard skills, and you know, his last year or two at Dayton was in the backcourt and led to a good NBA career. Yeah, with John, you know, again, he was an All-American at Notre Dame, although he had to work his way into the system a little bit because early in his career they had Kelly Trepuka and Orlando Woolridge and some really outstanding players. So he was really a role player initially, and then, you know, became a first-team All-American by the time he was finished up there. But both were highly recruited, and, you know, Notre Dame basketball is kind of back now where it was then, where, you know, it kind of slipped a little bit. But when John was getting recruited there and Digger Phelps, that was big time stuff. And then, of course, John, you know, hitting some of those shots in the NBA Finals, and I think his field goal percentage among all players that have played in the NBA Finals is in the top 10, which for a guard is pretty incredible. But you know, I got to see him shoot quite a bit in the driveway and in the gym as we were growing up, so it didn't surprise me at all. Kind of the big revelation for me is after my freshman year of college, I came back home for the summer, and a good friend of ours, one of my classmates that played at Dayton and played overseas, had just finished his freshman year at Dayton, playing with Jim Paxson as well at Dayton. And so this buddy of mine, a guy named Jack Zimmerman, started every game as a freshman at Dayton, averaging double figures. And then John was going into his junior year of high school. So I remember being back home, and we were playing a two-on-two, three-on-three game in the Zimmerman's driveway, which, you know, I don't know if kids are still doing that now at that kind of level of players, but we still did back in those days. And I hadn't really seen a lot of John because I was off at college and just home for the summer. And John just totally had his way with Jack, who was, you know, already an accomplished Division I starter on a good team. And John, just going into his junior year of high school, was toying with him. And that's when the light bulb came on to me that, oh, my gosh, this is really something special and maybe a level even beyond what Jim is going to be.
Kim, I can't thank you enough for coming on. You've already given us a half an hour, and that's, you know, I really can't tell you how much I appreciate it. We look forward to having you on many more times, and I'm looking forward to hear the feedback from the audience, too. Just send me an email to chicagobulls@gmail.com. Tim, thanks a lot again, basketball historian. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show.
Well, you're welcome, Fred, and go Bulls. Hope they take care of business in this next game.